This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Can you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. Millions of Americans finance the home of their dreams. With their help, they can help you too. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. Glad you're with us at a Trash Tuesday. Taking your trashes via Twitter, DA on CBS, or via the phones at 855-212-4227. Also coming up in 9 minutes, the first two out of the 12 DAs of Christmas. Yesterday was the first. Today is the second as we count down until Friday's number 12 on the most memorable moments of the DA show's calendar year. Coming up on Saturday, the SEC championship game, LSU against Georgia. Is it possible with a Bulldogs win, both teams get in to the college football playoff? Our next guest has been the lead SEC on CBS reporter since the beginning of last season. She'll be on the call with Brad Nessler and Gary Danielson as they make up one of the best college football broadcast teams in the nation. Coverage on CBS. Kickoff is at 4 o'clock, or coverage begins at 4 o'clock Eastern Time on CBS, our friend Jamie Erdahl. Jamie, good morning.
What's up, DA? How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I can't complain. You know, just another week.
Just another week, and it ends in an SEC championship game, and somebody's going to the college football playoff. Let's start with Joe Burrow, because what a season, what a story it has been. I thought it was pretty amazing last week, the type of outpouring of emotion he had towards Tiger Nation and his years at LSU. What type of bond was it between Burrow and the fans in Baton Rouge?
That's pretty remarkable. I think this is a young man that, I don't want to say he was wronged along the way, but, you know, working with Gary Danielson, he has a really interesting path in his playing time. And we were talking about Joe Burrow a couple weeks ago. Gary got pretty emotional after our game at Alabama, and just in the context of so many people doubted him along the way. And I think he feels a connection to Joe Burrow in that respect. You know, he wasn't heavily recruited coming out of high school. He goes to what many would argue as a young man that grew up in Ohio, you know, his dream school and going to Ohio State. Obviously, things don't pan out there for a number of reasons. And then he has to turn elsewhere. And of all the places a kid from Ohio could land, going to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and not only surviving there and getting along there, but thriving and succeeding and being embraced by a community more than anyone that I've really ever seen before, has just been a remarkable story. I don't blame him for the way he responded on senior night. I think that credit was due to the Baton Rouge community, to LSU football. It's just this match made in heaven that we never knew we needed in college football until we saw it unfold over the last two seasons. And I just am so happy for him that he was able to have that moment with, you know, with those fans.
It's a magical season for LSU, and it ends in an SEC championship game. And should they win, of course, they'll be in the college football playoff, either as a one or a two seed, more than likely. And Ed Ogeron is finally getting the credit, I think, that he deserves. And yet, here's Joe Brady, who has walked in from the Saints, overhauled the offense, given Joe Burrow all of this control, and the offense has taken off. And Ed Ogeron hasn't really fought that credit that Brady has gotten. Does it say something about Ogeron's humility or lack of ego that he's allowing Joe Brady to collect a lot of the attention for the way the coaching has gone?
I think you hit the nail on the head. I've been saying this all season long, and it's a conversation we were able to have with Coach Ogeron earlier this year, how much humility it really takes. You know, you don't get into coaching, I don't think, head coaching, without a bit of an ego to stroke. As we all know, we kind of have to manipulate and work with coaches, and, you know, you want to be on their good side, and you know how to get there. And Ed Ogeron doesn't really have that place in his personality, and I think that goes right in line with how he's been able to bring Joe Brady in, and as you say, allow him to have this spotlight. But let's also not hide Steve Emsinger along this process. He is a brilliant offensive mind, and I think what happened here, yes, Joe Brady's arrival from the Saints bringing an NFL passing style offense has been of the utmost importance for LSU, but it's really, I think, a perfect storm of all three between Joe Burrow's development, his comfort coming into this LSU offense. I think if this was Joe Burrow's first year at LSU, I don't think we would be seeing the season that we're having. Keep in mind, he had last year to really get comfortable in his surroundings. He's really arrived. And then you have Steve Emsinger with his brilliance and his experience in college football. And then you have this fresh, you know, breath of fresh air from Joe Brady coming in with the NFL stuff. I think it was the perfect storm for LSU to put this offense on the field this season. So a lot of pieces had to come into play. And then at the top of it all is Ed Ogeron allowing this to unfold and him really kind of, you know, letting this offense go into the limelight. And I totally agree with you that this is Ed Ogeron, you know, his greatest compliment is his humility in letting this unfold.
Jamie Erdahl is going to be on the sideline for the SEC championship game. Number 2 LSU, number 4 Georgia coming up Saturday, 4 o'clock Eastern time on CBS. On the Georgia side of things, they probably felt pretty discredited all season long. The loss to South Carolina was terrible, but also their offense has been pretty clunky throughout the year. Is that, though, overshadowing just how good their defense has been and the quality wins they've been able to stack with that defense?
Yeah, I think it's interesting juxtaposition between Georgia and LSU, because here's a Georgia team that were, you know, with Jake Fromm over the last 2 years, I think everyone just kind of expected the offense to be the same, if not even more productive than what we've seen in years past. So when it didn't really start to unfold that way this season, everyone, a couple question marks, you know, even in a game that they won against Kentucky, people were upset they only scored, you know, 17 or 21 points, whatever it was. You know, why that's a disappointment, you know, your defense still held an SEC team scoreless. So it's just, I think, kind of the way you look through the scope of the team that you are cheering for in the SEC. So it's just kind of, you know, you got to focus on what's been great for you this year. People could have been really down on LSU's defense, but instead we are just high praising their LSU's offense. Why aren't we doing the same for Georgia and the way their defense has been playing what I think is the best, if not one of the top two defenses in the country, and instead people are kind of harping on their offensive lack of production. You know, it's just the nature of how seasons go, and credit to Georgia for riding the wave and allowing their defense to kind of get the job done some days.
The best part about your crew and the production team and the researchers, that CBS lives and breathes SEC, and so they know all the ins and outs, all the people that you work with know this conference inside and out. Is there a sense that if Georgia wins this game, that LSU still gets into the college football playoff, because their only loss would be to a top four team in Georgia in this game, or does a loss likely lock LSU out?
No, I think LSU is still in. I think the issue becomes is, I know they're then the conference champion. Georgia is, man, that really throws a wrench, doesn't it? Because then you have two unbeaten teams only in all of college football, and then you have about, I think it's 6 one-loss teams, and they're all waving their schedule in the air, like, hey, look at us, and I do not envy, you know, the guys that have to make those decisions from the committee, because you never want to show bias. You never want to think that one conference is stronger than the other. But, you know, oh man, that is a tough conversation. I'm sure, you know, not only will all of the SEC be watching our game Saturday, but I think it becomes a national conversation in terms of the monkey wrench that could be thrown in if Georgia were to beat LSU this weekend. I think a lot of people want it to play out where LSU takes care of business just to make it easier on everybody. But I do think LSU is still in if they lose this game.
You know, I tend to agree, because if you looked at the best one loss, if you just went by who has the best mm-hmm. loss,
right.
Utah's loss is to USC, Oklahoma's loss is to Kansas State, Baylor's loss would be to Oklahoma. I think, obviously, the best one loss would be LSU losing to Georgia in an SEC yeah. title game.
Right. And then if Georgia does win, their one loss is South Carolina. You could put that with the group that you previously mentioned. So
you can. Yeah, you can.
Yeah. But. So, yeah. I mean, it's kind of a double-edged sword for Georgia being as good as they are, getting this far. And if they were to win, they're almost bolstering LSU's argument, which is kind of such a weird twist of fate when it comes to college football. But I think LSU would still be in.
That's a good point. Jamie Erdahl joining us. She's going to be working the sidelines for the SEC championship game. Georgia and LSU, Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern time on CBS. Also on the CBS Sports Network, the Conference USA championship game at 1:30 Eastern time, FAU and UAB, to get your day started on the championship side of things. Jamie, have a great call coming up on Saturday. Can't wait to watch it.
Thanks, DA. Appreciate it.
You got it. Jamie Erdahl joining us this morning here on the show. You could argue that Baylor's best one loss, or Baylor's loss, is one of the best one losses because it's to Oklahoma. But it still wouldn't be as good as LSU's loss to number 4 Georgia. It wouldn't be. So I think she's exactly right. Everybody in college football and the playoff committee hopes LSU wins so that it makes it clean. They want LSU, Ohio State, and Clemson to win these 3 championship games, sweep them in. And then you'd probably put in Utah if Utah wins the Pac-12 championship game. If Utah loses, you probably then just have to go right to the Big Ten champion, or I should say the Big 12 champion, Oklahoma or Baylor. Winner then gets in after that. But if Georgia wins and suddenly you have one loss Georgia, one loss LSU, one loss Big 12 winner, one loss Utah, it's going to get real hairy. And you know people are going to throw a bleep fit if they put in 2 SEC teams, especially one that just lost its conference championship game. It is time for the 12 days of Christmas as we count down this week until number 12 begins on Friday. So these 4 days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, are the first 4 out. Here's another candidate for the first 4 out. We go back to February the 20th, when you might remember, right before spring training began, pitchers and catchers were reporting, and there was a young Yankees fan in attendance in Tampa who was griping about Manny Machado signing for all of that money in San Diego. So I tried to imitate him. This kid is amazing. And it should be noted, I believe WFAN reached out to his representation after this rant yesterday, seeing if he could do some weekend shifts for them.
It doesn't happen!
Actually, it's going to be JJ After Dark and the Yankee Kid coming up overnights on Saturdays.
Another kid will get shifts over me.
It doesn't happen!
So there's so much to break down here. Number one, don't you love an 8-year-old that can name other players? I mean, I don't know. We all thought that baseball was dying amongst kids. He's like, it's not Josh Donaldson. It's not Mookie Betts. I don't want any of those guys.
I don't want Bogarts. I don't want Betts. I don't want Donaldson. I don't want any of those guys.
None of them. It just doesn't happen.
It's kind of like taking Tom Brady from the Patriots and adding him to the Dolphins. It just doesn't happen.
What was that, Perez?
I don't want washed up Jim Kelly. It just doesn't happen.
From another team.
Hey, Brad.
Hey, Kevin Moss.
Doesn't happen.
Hey, Kevin. Hey, Tarnable. You got a ball over there? Hey, Tarnable. Hey, I need your autograph. Shut up, kid. Okay? Shut up.
I don't want AC Feely. I don't want Rob Johnson. It's just like putting them on the chest. It doesn't happen.
Hey, Brad.
Doesn't happen.
All right. I don't want to move on. It doesn't happen.
Doesn't happen.
I don't want to watch up Fred McGriff. I don't want old Wade Box on the range. It doesn't happen.
Doesn't happen.
We were saying that's like a young Mraz. That's what Mraz would be yelling about at Yankee spring training.
Doesn't happen.
So that's the first four out, one of the first four out. You can vote on the 12 DAs of Christmas. We are taking the fan vote this year. Simply go to Facebook.com/TheDA Show. I'll update those rankings coming up here later on in the hour. Also, you can vote on Twitter, DA on CBS. It's a Trash Tuesday, so get us your trashes as well. When we come back, Tom Brady, Mitchell Trubisky. Stats are pretty similar. How scary is that, or is it realistic? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Yeah, you like that, big boy?
Good morning. Enjoy your show immensely. I mean that sincerely, DA. I don't know what age bracket you're in, your 50s, maybe early 50s.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
23 minutes past the hour. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. We thank you for being part of a Trash Tuesday. The DA show every single day brings the noise, brings the pain, and brings the funnies. At least we hope. 9 until noon Eastern Time, 6 until 9 Pacific. And if you missed any part of the DA show, you can always get it in podcast form. Simply go to iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, radio.com, or other places that podcasts are available and get full episodes there. The Game Plan for Success, sponsored by Napa. Taking a look at the plan for success for the Utah Utes as they take on the Oregon Ducks in the Pac-12 championship game. Utah has won 8 straight games since their September loss to USC. A win over Oregon may find themselves in the college football playoff, will likely find themselves in the college football playoff, assuming that LSU beats Georgia. To win this game, Utah's elite defense and their great ground game has to be the focal point of the success. Utah leads the Pac-12 and the nation in rush defense, allowing only 56 yards per game. Napa believes every driver deserves quality auto parts. That's why you can do it yourself at a Napa Auto Parts store or have it done for you at a Napa Auto Care Center. Either way, that's Napa know-how. I like Utah in this game. I think the Utes will have enough to disrupt Oregon's ground attack. I think they'll really stymie the Oregon offense. I think they'll be able to run the football, even though this is going to be a Pac-12 championship game that's going to be unlike what you normally think. You'll think wide open offense, big time quarterbacks, aerial shows. That's not the way that these two teams are built. Mario Cristobal loves the trenches, former offensive lineman himself at Oregon. They love to run the football. Utah kind of can only run the football. Utah's defense is smash mouth. It is strong. It is physical. It is swarming. Utah's defense is going to be a bear for Oregon coming up on Friday night. But I think Utah ends up getting the victory here. I think they set themselves up for waiting to see how everything unfolds on Saturday to see if they get themselves in the college football playoff. I believe if the favorites hold to form, Clemson, LSU, Ohio State, I do think a Utah win puts them in over the Big 12 winner. But I will always say that you never know what the playoff committee wants to do in terms of television. They are set up ostensibly to create 3 television events, 2 semifinals and a championship. That's what they're there to do. It is a made-for-TV movie, the college football playoff, which is why we have Tuesday night rankings come out throughout the year. And would it surprise me that instead of Utah's brand, they want Oklahoma's brand? I don't think it would be fair. It wouldn't surprise me, though. I would cry bloody murder because, as I've said, I think that the Sooners deserve nowhere near consideration for this playoff. Nothing. You get nothing in the Big 12. You were losing by 3 touchdowns to Kansas State. before you ended up losing that game. You blew a 3-touchdown lead at home in the fourth quarter to Iowa State and needed a questionable 2-point conversion to not fall Iowa State's way to survive that game. You trailed by 25 points to Baylor in that game. Found a way to win, but at one point in that game, you were nearly 4 touchdowns worse than Baylor. You have needed rabbits out of the hat in a down conference. I'm sorry, I cannot put you in the college football playoff with that resume. But might the playoff committee like that Oklahoma brand? Oh, they might.
You need to eat like this. You need to eat like this.
So CBS Sports HQ tweeted out a comparison of Tom Brady's numbers over the last 9 weeks of the season against much maligned Mitchell Trubisky. And it's gotten a lot of play. It's gone viral. People are talking about it because obviously it pits one of the greatest of all time with one of the worst starting quarterbacks in the NFL. But since week number 4, Brady's numbers versus Trubisky's numbers. Brady, 11 touchdowns, Trubisky, 10. Brady, 6 interceptions, Trubisky, 5. Brady's completion percentage, lower than Trubisky, 59 to Mitchell's 63. Quarterback rating, Brady's lower than Trubisky, 80 to Trubisky's 85. Yards per attempt, lower than Trubisky, 6.2 to 6.3. So if you're grading this at home, Tom Brady has one more touchdown, one more interception, a lower completion percentage, a lower quarterback rating, and a lower yards per attempt since week 4 versus Mitchell Trubisky. Now, is Brady as bad as Trubisky? The answer is no. There is no way you can make the argument that if you needed to win a football game tomorrow, it would be a push between Brady or Trubisky, or that there would be some people that would choose Trubisky. That's ridiculous. But I have to say, I am a little caught off guard. Maybe I shouldn't be. Maybe I've been around the block long enough to know this. That there is such a hesitancy to admit that Brady's looking older from so many of the assembled media. As I mentioned yesterday, Chris Collinsworth must have thrown out his back trying to bend over, make excuses for Brady on Sunday night. Nobody's getting open. Nobody's getting separation. There's not enough weapons. The offensive line stinks. Tom Brady's about 6 inches away from having thrown 2 pick-sixes in that game. Brady had more time in Sunday night's game, more set in the pocket than almost any other game this year. Romeo Crennel's defense, and Romeo Crennel coached alongside Tom Brady, was the defensive coordinator for the Patriots in the first half of their dynasty. Romeo Crennel's defensive scheme on Sunday night was, let Brady beat us. And Tony Dungy said this in the studio. He said, it sounds crazy, but what you do is now you stop the run against the Pats and you try to let Tom Brady beat you because you can win the game. Note, the Texans didn't throw blitzes out there. The Texans never blitz. The Texans only rushed 4 normally, sometimes a delayed 5th man, but mainly sat back and said, okay, Tom, let's go. We're going to double Edelman, and now you try to beat us with the other guys. And before I hear this, he has no weapons. Brady's career has been defined by people saying Brady's the greatest because he hasn't needed great weapons. He won 3 Super Bowls, everybody, with David Patton, David Givens, Troy Brown, and Deion Branch as his wide receivers. Come on. Now suddenly it's about he's got to have more weapons. The reason is he's older. He's less effective. I mean, Bill Barnwell is one of the best football writers in America. His column yesterday, which is excellent, about what has happened to the Patriots offense, cited maybe Brady's elbow injury is worse than we know. Maybe he's 42. I mean, this is not hard to figure out. And I find this interesting because Brady put out there the 45-year-old thing. I'm going to play till I'm 45. And that became the barometer of how long we expected him to be effective. That then became the law. He'll play until he's 45. And so in our mind, he'll play effectively until he's 45. Had Tom Brady said, I'll play until I'm 42, people would then this year say, well, see, he's 42. He said this was going to be the end. He's 42. It's like only Brady we have erased the actual age. And in some ways, I understand why. He has played remarkably well up until 42. But Joe Montana retired at 38 years old. Tom Brady has played 4 to 5 years longer than Joe Montana. And if you remember, if you're a football fan from the 90s or before, you remember how old Joe Montana looked at 38. I mean, he was frail and he was old and he lost tons of zip on his fastball. And his final years, the 2 years with the Chiefs, he was basically a game manager. For some reason, we refuse to believe this with Tom Brady, and it's a little bit of a sleight of hand by Brady. He looks young physically in his face and his hair, and he has not been injured, and so people kind of assume that he'll just play forever. He's 42. At some point, you can't escape it. Like, next year, if he comes back and plays poorly, are we still going to say, well, it's the offensive line? If at 45 years old, he is actually playing, which I wouldn't put it past him, and he's throwing ducks, are we going to say, well, there's no targets, too much wind, the offensive line? It's just that people think he should be able to keep playing longer, but physically, no one's ever been able to do this, ever. He's already surpassed what any quarterback has been able to do at his age. Why wouldn't we see a regression physically? Why wouldn't we? Of course we would. I don't know how you can look at Brady's last 9 weeks and not think some of this is age. Peyton Manning, at the end of his career, we were all ready to say, hey, it's over. He's toast. He's got to retire. He's old. He's 40 years old. I mean, look, he's 40. Yet Brady's 42 and nobody can say, well, yeah, he's 42 years old. It's like we won't allow ourselves to go there because it's somehow disrespectful, I guess. I say this out of respect. I can't believe he's still playing at 42. This is remarkable. It's admirable. It's fantastic. But it's not crazy that a 42-year-old quarterback, no matter how much avocado ice cream he's eaten, no matter how pliable and flexible he is, no matter how lack of injuries, how many lack of injuries he has suffered. It is not notable that a 42-year-old quarterback would play the equal of Mitchell Trubisky. That's not crazy. And when you look at the schedule, everyone says, well, the overall numbers are good. Well, his first 3 weeks of the season was against the Steelers, the Dolphins, and the Jets. He put up monster numbers those 3 weeks. After that, things started to come back down to earth. Why wouldn't it? He's 42. You know, was Peyton Manning good for the first quarter or two in that final season? Yeah. And then he tailed off in quarters 3 and 4. Could Brady have been really good in the first month but tail off over the course of a 16-game schedule in a 5-month season? Of course. And that shouldn't be that shocking. He's definitely not as bad as Mitchell Trubisky. That's unfair. But you don't have to watch much Patriots football to realize he looks like he's 42, and he should because he's 42. And that's not a discredit. That is not a, you know, it's not being mean. It's not some type of course, he's 42. I mean, he can't do it forever, and now it's finally looking like it. And that's just the way that life goes. And it's just hard for some people to accept that. When we come back here on the show, the baby race,
if the baby can't breathe,
what is you? The baby race at the New Orleans Pelicans game the other night has created such a firestorm inside the DA Show walls. And yet I am here to tell you it is one of the great sporting experiences of the last 20 years. We'll play the highlights of it next and discuss and dissect the baby race in New Orleans. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Little wet, little drippy, 24/7.
I have no real will towards Damon and Mandalore.
Joe, I love you.
Damon. All the love, Damon.
All the love.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Our toll-free line, 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico, everyone. Quick way you could save money switching to Geico. Homeowners, renters, motorcycle insurance, too. Get it all, geico.com. The DA Show is on YouTube. Watch the best of clips, including all of the 12 DAs of Christmas, as we count them down on YouTube. Find the best of moments and the best rants and the best moments throughout the year, every single day, on YouTube. Pete tweets in, DA, Tom Brady's first three Super Bowls were won on ball control defense and Adam Vinatieri's foot. Since then, he's had Moss, Gronk, Hernandez, Welker, Edelman, AB, albeit briefly, and a bunch of great pass-catching running backs. He has had plenty of weapons. He has never done, quote, more with less than any quarterback. Well, I think that's a fair point, Pete. A lot of people tend to forget that Tom Brady played with two Hall of Fame targets, two of the greatest ever to play in their prime, in Randy Moss and Gronk. So the idea that Brady has never had great weapons was always kind of a neat narrative from the early three Super Bowls. I agree with you on that. And Welker in his prime, one of the best pass catchers in football. Edelman has turned into an incredible, dependable receiver as well. You can't count Antonio Brown, but Josh Gordon's been very predictable in terms of finally getting on the field when he was on there with the Patriots and delivering instead of the unpredictability within the Browns organization. So he's had some options. It's not like he's only been given dog slop to work with. But what the Patriots have evolved into is an offense where the quarterback and quick reads, quick throws, timing and accuracy are the strength. And it worked when Brady could make the quick decisions and get the ball there quickly and have confidence in the pocket that he will be able to deliver. Now, some of this is on the wide receivers, the targets, for having to create the separation, and some of this is definitely on the offensive line to give him more time. But ultimately, when you watch it, you see that Brady's indecision at times, holding onto the football, throwing it away, throwing ducks into space, away from receivers, is not always somebody else. And it's time just to recognize that. And look, they're still a really good team, obviously, but it's not crazy to think that this is what a 42-year-old quarterback would become. Falco tweets, DA, that making tacos drop has ruined tacos for me. Been making so many tacos, regular tacos, shrimp tacos, chicken tacos, pulled pork tacos, brisket tacos. I can't take it anymore. Hashtag, how could it happen? Tacos.
Jimmy Johnson said, as long as you're making tacos, I love you. As soon as you don't make no tacos, I don't love you no more.
Aaron tweets, I'm trashing the cold I've had for the past 5 days. Enough already. I'm a little wet. I'm a little drippy.
Pardon me, my fault. I'm a little wet, a little drippy.
Beep, beep. Sanitation just arrived.
Lonnie tweets, I'm trashing allergies. You know everyone wants a real Christmas tree. A few years ago, I found out why we always have a fake tree. I took after my mother. I'm allergic to Christmas trees.
I smell rotten eggs.
That's rough. Courtney's the first lady trash Tuesday. I'm trashing honeydew melon. It's basically the Florida of fruit salad. Beautiful to look at, but nobody really wants it.
So frustrating.
I actually like the state of Florida better than I like honeydew melon. I mean, you know the bad fruit salads. Mushy cantaloupe. Soft, slimy honeydew melon. And grapes. Nobody wants that fruit salad. You throw some strawberries in there. Some blueberries. Okay, I'm talking to you. Orange slice or two, maybe if you cut up bananas, Now we got something. If you're bringing the quote-unquote fruit salad and it's honeydew, cantaloupe, and grapes, take a hike.
If it has pineapple in it, it becomes okay.
Okay, pineapple is a step up, but let's face it. Slimy honeydew, mushy cantaloupe, and grapes, that ain't a fruit salad. That's the
Get them out.
That's the trash of the fruit salad.
Can we just state the obvious here, coming from the pork of the pork store? Why would you eat fruit salad anyway with all the delicious desserts that come out around this time?
Well, fruit salad's not always just about a holiday dessert. It can be about other treats during the other months of the season, too.
Nonetheless.
Over the weekend, there was an amazing event in New Orleans at the home of the Pelicans. During halftime of the Pelicans game, you had parents, I would say probably 7 to 8 pairs of parents, maybe up to 10, who split up on each side of midcourt. And between them, let's just say it's 30 feet. One father on one side, one mother on the other side, or vice versa. And they would push their baby out into a race, and the baby would then be crawling to the other parent. And the winner of the baby race won a gift card to the Pelicans Pro Shop and an autographed jersey as well. Well, as you might imagine, this was all sorts of amazing.
All right, parents, make sure behind the start line. Parents, make sure you're behind the start line. All right. They got to crawl, remember.
You have to have the parents behind the line because they could crawl out the parents on their knees past the line and kind of guide their babies in. No, you got to stay behind the line. So the key is, will the babies be able to see, if the baby can't breathe, will the babies be able to see to the other side of the finish line their other parent? And will they recognize the other parent and want to be crawling towards the parent?
Number 6, on a mission. On a mission. On a mission. Haul and sash. She's all in sash. Ooh, a little fire hydrant motion there.
She brings with a fire hydrant move. Now, this MC at the stadium is amazing because this baby is raising its leg like a dog. It's stretching its haunch out. It's an amazing move. Really stretching that right leg out. Baby's crawling. Right leg is stretched out. She's calling it the fire hydrant move.
Autumn trying to catch up. She's scooting. Will it be hauling sass? Will it be hauling sass? Oh, gotta get to the finish line. Gotta get to the finish line. So close, so close. And... Finish line.
It's amazing. At this moment, this baby girl is at the finish line, stops, sits, looks at her parent, turns around, and starts going back to midcourt. So she does a whole dippity-doo zipperoo. You don't know if she's coming or going. She's teasing everybody. She had a huge head start. The other babies are just sucking their thumbs. They're at the starting line. None of the babies know what they're doing. This baby goes all the way to the finish line, then turns around.
Oh, look at her. Look at her. Will it be Autumn Breeze? Oh, now Holland Sass wants to get in on it. Okay, is she going to be too late or will she pass her up? Who's it going to be? Oh.
The baby turns around again at the finish line and then goes and meets another baby and they embrace. There's a girl baby and a boy baby, and now they're embracing about 5 feet from the finish line.
Oh, it's obviously a play day down here on the... Aww! This might be the cutest baby crawl race we've ever witnessed here at the Smoothie King Center.
There is so many twists and turns, dramatics of this. This was like LSU Bama. This was like the Iron Bowl. This was like the AFC Championship game last year. You didn't know who was going to win. There were so many twists of fate through the whole thing.
Autumn Breeze! Autumn Breeze! Autumn Breeze! She's our winner! Congratulations, Autumn Breeze! You're $250 richer to our Pelicans. Team Shop also going home with the autographed Drew Holiday jersey. Autumn, congratulations. Let's have your moment. Do you have anything to say, Autumn? Say hey.
Well, the baby has nothing to say because it's a baby. But how about the winner being named Autumn Breeze? Is that her real name?
Sounds like a horse Jody Mack would bet on.
Autumn Breeze. Autumn Breeze wins the baby race? And the final call is amazing. Let's go through some of the great final calls ever.
Autumn Breeze, Autumn Breeze, Autumn Breeze. She's our winner.
The
I thought this was amazing in every way, shape, and form. And yet I stare at a man across the glass from me, Pete the Body Bilotti, that hates everything with every bone in his body about this race. I will ask him why. Next, the great debate of the baby race.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.